irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today we have with us on the show Meg Mankey. Meg has many years of experience in leading through transition, from major changes in the highly regulated industries to managing through a $100 million acquisition. Meg has redefined skills in understanding people through change. Her studies in organizational psychology and mastery in leadership concepts ensure that your people are taken care of, period. Meg has a passion for helping others realize their full potential and breaking down social and personal barriers, including changing their story. Her innate ability to recognize opportunity and weakness and present a strategic solution is unprecedented in today's business world. Meg is a ranch kid from Western South Dakota, where she puts in a hard day's work on the family place. Ranch life gave her a stick-to-itiveness, passion for family and the outdoors, and a touch of stubbornness. Meg is an avid runner, an advocate of the well-rounded education of youth, and a major supporter of finding humor in all things. Thanks so much for joining us today, Meg.
Hi, thanks for having me, Jennifer.
Yeah, it's such a pleasure to have you on. And before we jump into the interview, of course, I just want to diverge for a moment and thank our sponsors, the folks over at Markham Search. Markham Search makes today's show possible. They are a recruiting staffing company with offices in New York, Boston, and California, providing recruiting and staffing solutions throughout the United States. So a special thank you to our sponsors and a special thank you to you for joining us today, Meg.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about this. So you grew up on a ranch and you became this expert in change management. So tell me a little bit about how your career developed from working on a ranch to what you do now.
Yeah, well, a lot of the lessons on the ranch served me as I grew into a professional businesswoman. When cows are going the direction they're not supposed to, and the wind is blowing the direction you wish it wasn't, and all the other things are happening, you have to sort out a new plan pretty quickly. So that kind of led me to deciding I wanted to be a career woman and frankly not have to ranch and be out in the cold for the rest of my life. And so followed that path and have been pleasantly surprised that my career has led me to dealing with and working with people all over the country and the world every day.
So tell me a little bit about what it is you do specifically. Is your practice specific to change management, or is it more all-encompassing when it comes to leadership?
Yeah, we really focus on leadership as a whole, and we focus really on values-based leadership. We created a system called IX Leadership. IX stands for Internal Experience within your organization. And so within that, we talk about kind of soup to nuts, everything from how do you sort of align your own core values as a leader to how do you align values within the organization and then within each team and each department and building up through the organization so that everybody comes to work every day feeling like, well, I guess as it were, Patriots fans, the most relevant sports analogy to use. Lately, but that everybody's sort of got that, you know, waving that big number one foam finger on their hand and really loving work. So, yeah, we talk about leadership as a whole, and then the specific target in terms of change is really the transition of change and how the process of change works, and then how each culture type in our system gets through that change and how they experience it differently.
So let's talk about that. What are the four culture types that are out there?
Yeah, so the four culture types are fixers, independents, stabilizers, and organizers. And the fixers and independents are on it's a four-square matrix, and so they're on the top half of that graph. They're really more chaos tolerant, or what they like to call, they like freedom, don't like to be sort of in a box or confined to a certain set of ideas. And then on the bottom half, there's the order tolerant folks, the stabilizers and organizers. And then on the left side, the fixers and stabilizers really prefer a team environment, and the independents and organizers on the right side prefer the opportunity to process something themselves first and then go visit with the team. So we've created this system, and it's not set up to identify personality types. It's set up to identify work preferences. So how do people in a team actually work together, and how do their differences actually build on each other? That's what we teach people when we work with them in different organizations, how to take those differences and use them as an opportunity to understand each other better and work together better.
So I'm fascinated by this. I would love to know more about, say, as a hypothetical, let's say that you have a manager, and let's just say that this manager is an organizer, and I know very little about it based on what you've said, but I can get a general sense. So this is somebody who is order tolerant and maybe more of an individual and less of a team person. And that person is overseeing a fixer and an independent. How would your philosophies and IX come in and help to improve the cohesiveness in that team?
Right. So the organizer's first task would be, so organizers and fixers are exactly opposite of each other. So that fixer employee might drive the organizer supervisor crazy.
That's what I was just thinking.
They're constantly looking for, like, let's go do this new thing. Let's try that new thing. And hey, let's get a group together and talk about it. And the organizer's thinking, holy buckets, we don't even have an agenda for this yet. And you're sort of driving me crazy. I need time to sit down and process this. So the first most important thing in using the culture type assessment is to just know those differences. And so then it's a little less crazy making. The process of going through all of that is still like, what is wrong with you? But it transitions over time into, oh yeah, okay, you're a fixer, so you want a project. So as an organizer, leader, you would say, okay, fixer, I would love to give you this project. Can you go get a team together and decide how we're going to do these three things with this new change or with whatever's going on? Now, the independent, they're more self-driven, so they don't necessarily need that team vibe, but they definitely want some sort of chaos or freedom to be innovative. So you give them a project that they could go work on themselves. And sometimes it's really great if you have an independent who is really technically savvy in a certain area, because then you can give them, you know, a nuts and bolts project and say, okay, take this and go make it into something beautiful and come back and show me what you've done. Because that's what they really love. They love the opportunity to go build something on their own and then bring it back to the team.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, it sounds like fixers and independents, you said they're both chaos tolerant, but the biggest difference is that independents are able to kind of self-motivate a little bit more versus a fixer is going to be more impactful when they're part of a team, if I'm hearing you correctly.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. That's exactly right. And the great thing about the way our system analyzes teams is that while fixers and organizers and stabilizers and independents might drive each other a little crazy, they're actually necessary for each other, right? Because so I'm an independent, but I'm an independent fixer. And so when my fixer brain turns on and I have this big juicy idea and I'm like, okay, let's get the team together and talk about this for a little bit, I have to have an organizer to say, okay, is anybody taking notes? Like, when are we going to actually get everything done? Are we going to put a timeline to this? Because I'm up at the whiteboard, like waving my hands and saying, okay, we're going to do this and then we can do that. And so it's really critical, actually, to have, you know, a well-rounded team who has all of those different culture types, if you can. If you can't, that's okay. It's just when you know that that's the case, you have to decide, like, who's actively going to take the order-tolerant role. Or if you're all order-tolerant, who's actively going to take the chaos tolerant role and make sure that, you know, you're being innovative. So the polar opposites actually play really well with each other.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because it's so funny. We had that years and years ago. We all went to a escape room, my team and I, and one of the people in our office was by and far unequivocally the organizer. And it was just funny to see how well we all worked as a team, where we were able to solve problems because half the group was probably chaos tolerant and the other half was not. And the organizer was the one in the office who would create new systems, templates, et cetera. And she was solving puzzles in the room that none of the rest of us knew how to fix or how to work around. And so it was really great to see that sort of synergy and how in a day-to-day world, you might take one another for granted. The person who always steps up and takes notes in a meeting, you might not think twice about it, but actually to see how the problem solving works in a live situation like that can illustrate the differences a little bit more clearly.
Yeah, it's crazy. And the way that the system is designed actually shows people that the things that have made us nuts for years and years are actually the things that are so wonderful about the teams we've designed. And so I actually just worked with a group. I've been working with this group for a couple months, a consulting gig. I've got executive coaching, and I'm working with the whole group. And they were in a meeting just a couple weeks ago, and they said they were talking about this big change, rolling out this new software. And one of the stabilizers, and she's a deep stabilizer, she's struggling with this change in the software and why do we need to do it and how, you know, like, how is this impacting everyone? And so they said they're in the meeting and they're all tied. There's a bunch of fixers and they're all talking about it and whatever. And she was like, kind of, well, what about this and what about that? And they said, oh yeah, stabilizer. Okay. Well, what can we do to help you feel more comfortable? We get it. Like, you're not in the same part of the change as we are. So, you know, what questions can we answer? And so, and then they kind of joked about it, like, oh yeah, we forgot you're the stabilizer, instead of being like, geez, how come Susie, using different names to protect the innocent.
Of course.
How come Susie's always such a pain? Like, she never gets on the boat, you know, and this is such a problem. And so it actually does transition that conversation from, you know, a point of angst to actually, oh, well, great. We actually know how to make sense of this now.
Yeah, I think that's the most brilliant thing. I remember years ago when I first started studying personality and culture profiles and this phenomenon, it's so important to understand it, because you would, in the recruiting world, for example, get somebody, you would have candidate A, who we would present a job and we'd say, oh, we have XYZ law firm paying $100,000 a year. Are you interested? And candidate A would say, absolutely. Then you would have candidate B, who we might present a job or two. Same job, we have this job paying $100,000 a law firm. Candidate B would have 500 questions and 1 week later might consider having their resume submitted for that position. And in the recruiting world, law firms and corporations alike might not even want to see the candidate. Or I had somebody who once upon a time almost rescinded a job seeker for somebody who was probably somewhere between a stabilizer and an organizer. And she could not make a choice without having 100 questions answered. And they trusted me. And I said, listen, this is just how she's designed as a human being. And if you can have compassion for the fact that she might be designed differently than you, please don't rescind the offer. Give her another day to get these questions answered. And she's still there to this day. And she was the most invaluable employee they ever hired. But that lack of understanding and compassion could have prevented them from hiring her.
Oh, that's so true. We're actually working with a recruiting firm right now that's out in New England. And we're culture typing jobs and then culture typing the candidates.
Wow.
So that we can get a pretty good idea of, you know, so if it's actually a fixer job where you have to be chaos tolerant, moving all the time, working in a team, that we are looking for candidates that prefer that work environment. And that's not to say, of course, that a stabilizer, you know, or any of the other culture types couldn't do the job, but it gives the recruiter a better idea of what sorts of qualities, work preference qualities or characteristics they actually want to be looking for in the candidate. We have the candidate take the quiz, the assessment, so they know what their type is. And then we tell them what the type of the job is. So they know, like, holy buckets, that sounds really horrible to have to be like chaos tolerant. And, you know, like, that is not my idea of a good time. And so maybe then they can kind of vet themselves and say, yeah, this isn't for me.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Trust me, as a recruiter right now, I'm salivating at the thought of that, because how many times does it happen? In fact, we were just looking from a team standpoint over the last 6 months, why people didn't work out in jobs. And overall, across all industries, there's typically about a 20% on average attrition or fall off rate of what we call in the industry of people who don't work out once they start a job. But using these sort of skills and tools, you might be able to get that down to 5 or 10%, because half the time it is about, a breakdown in communication is party X goes in thinking, oh, this is going to be the best job ever. And then the person who's doing the hiring thinks, oh, this is the best person ever. And they get there the first day. And there's a complete disconnect on the expectations.
Yep. It's like recruitment magic.
I love it. So tell me, I know the one of the other things that I'm fascinated by is the number one killer of high performing teams, this idea of unspoken conversations. What does that look like?
Well, it looks a lot like the ugly eye rolls, the conversation, the, I call it church whispering, you know, where two people are talking at the kitchen area or whatever in the office about the third person, and the third person doesn't even know like that they've done anything wrong or to offend someone or to irritate someone. And boy, if somebody would just say, hey, Jim, when you said XYZ thing in the meeting, you were really off the mark, or a better way to say it, I really didn't understand what you were talking about. Can you explain a little bit more? But we don't have conversations like that, even though we're adults. Frankly, children are better at having those conversations. And so the unspoken conversation where we actively choose not to talk about the things that need to be talked about, those are the very things that can break down teams. And really, those are the things that help us lose our good people, because good people won't tolerate that for very long. They, you know, they know their own worth, and they say, okay, well, I guess if we're not going to talk about, I mean, how many times have you heard somebody, oh, you quit that job, it was such a good job, why did you leave? Well, because I kept bringing up an idea, or I knew I wanted to talk to so-and-so about this thing or that thing that wasn't working right, and nobody wanted to hear it, so I figured my services would be better elsewhere. So the unspoken conversation really is the number one killer of teams. And so we talk about different tools that you can use, and sort of just putting on your big boy and big girl pants and having conversations, even though they're rough. It's better to have them up front than to have them as a, oh, by the way, I'm putting in my 2 weeks conversation.
Yeah, because then you've already, it's almost too late. And then if somebody does accept a counteroffer, they stay and people make promises to change things. Typically, there's something culturally at the core of that organization that's having this happen, and the person still winds up leaving 3 or 6 months later.
Right, exactly. That person leaves. And then if you're not addressing that issue, the unspoken conversation, you perfectly design, by intention or accident, you perfectly design your environment. And so then you hire new people into this culture that you don't want. And those people, good or bad, aren't going to stay very long either. Because really, at the end of the day, nobody wants to live miserably. And basically, we all live at work. That's the way it is. So, you know, it's really crucial for the people that are on your team now and the people that will be on your team in the future that you are paying attention to what environment you're providing and what that sounds like. And if it sounds like silent conversations, eye rolls, you know, huffing and sighing and side meetings, you better take a look at what your turnover looks like. And if it's going up, you might want to consider doing something different.
So on that note, what are some tools that people might be able to utilize in order to engage in some of these unspoken conversations?
Well, one of the first tools that we talk about, and this is really a mindset tool, and it's, so we call it the Mad Hatter Principle. And the Mad Hatter Principle references the term Mad Hatter because in the 19th century, hatters used mercuric acid to cure the felt so that they could make hats. Well, it made them a little bit nutty because they had heavy metal poisoning. So they go home to their friends and family and act very strangely around them. And their friends and family didn't know what was going on. And so it's just like if you have a person that you work with on a daily basis in your work family, and they come to work and they're acting peculiar, whether they're being mean or they're a little off the mark on performance or if they're just acting sort of batty, it's probably because something else is affecting their world. And so you have to assume that no one is being nefarious on purpose on a daily basis. People that you work with have good intentions. Now, their intentions might be different than yours, for whatever reason. And that's where that spoken conversation has to happen. So you understand where they're coming from. And maybe it's just they had a bad day because their cat ran out of the house, you know, in the morning before they left for work, and they spent 2 hours looking for the cat. And so asking those questions and checking in on people and assuming always first that no one is really trying to screw up your day on purpose. That's sort of our number one rule to start with in terms of, you know, how do you stop the unspoken conversations?
Yeah, I love that. One of my mentors years ago said that if we could just all go under the assumption that nobody's misbehaving, like we're always in personal relationships, professional relationships, romantic relationships, we go out under the assumption that this person's intentionally misbehaving. And often we don't get to the root of it because we're afraid to have those conversations, or we sweep it under the rug and never discuss it. And then eventually it blows up or people just leave and then never know what happens.
Yep, exactly. And all of that, we usually talk about with all of that sort of conversation, we talk about the accountability loop, which is, that's not RIP, that's another system created by someone else, but there's the accountability loop, and then there's transversely the victim loop. And we all, whether we'd like to admit it or not, live in the victim loop a lot. And so the accountability loop actually helps you like cut out the denying and the blaming and the sweeping under the rug and rationalizing away all these issues. And it makes you think about like, well, what do I need to do? Or what do I want to have happen? The experience cube is another tool that we use a lot too. And that helps foster a good conversation when there's conflict. So those are some of the tools that we share with people. And that's all in our book actually too.
Wonderful. I love that. Obviously, everybody will talk about the book at the end and make sure everybody knows where to go out and find that. So tell me a little bit about what is the impact of these different culture types on productivity?
What is the impact of the different culture types on productivity?
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I heard you right. Well, you know, it kind of depends on the sometimes the industry, sometimes the setup of the team and what their objectives are. So an example I would use, we were working with a group in the manufacturing sector. And typically what we have seen in manufacturing, mining, construction, it's a lot of stabilizer work. Like you're moving widget from point A to point B, point A to point B, or you're stamping something all day long, or maybe you're in a piece of equipment and your job, you know, say you're in a dozer and your job is to move dirt back and forth all day long. And so then if those organizations roll into a growth phase, or if, you know, if they want to change, let's say they commission a new raw materials warehouse, or they're starting a new project and they want all these stabilizers who are really great at stabilizer jobs to then be chaos tolerant and a little bit innovative, more than they normally would be, and very out of their ordinary, that can actually cut back on your productivity, because those people do not love uncertainty. Like they can't, they don't want it. They don't want to have to process it. They don't want to adapt to it. And so depending sometimes on the industry that an organization is operating in and the kinds of things that they're asking people to do, they can sort of look at assess the whole environment of their culture types in their industry and within their organization and say, well, if we're probably a stabilizer organization and we want to hit an innovation phase, you know, how do we do that effectively? What kind of information should we impart on those order tolerant people? What kind of tasks should we ask them to do? How do we line out this work so that it feels comfortable to them? Then if it's in a smaller team, it depends on what kind of things you're doing every day. Fixers actually, and independents, they can kind of be like when you leave the dog that needs lots of attention home alone for several hours at a time, and you come home and like there's claw marks scratched on, like you think you've put them in a place that they cannot destroy it, and yet they find something to destroy. And you're like, how did you do that? I thought I put you in a very safe place.
That is hilarious.
That's what fixers and independents do if they get bored. And not intentionally, of course. but they're going and trying to fix something or create something where something doesn't need to be fixed or created. And so that can actually be counterproductive. And so if people are in an environment that they don't prefer, they can be, not always, but they can be counterproductive. So it's super important as a leader to understand the culture types and understand how to motivate them. I was just talking with a gentleman that we work with on and off, and he works for a global company that shall remain nameless. But he said, you know, we really shifted our focus at our facility from national production to international production, and we're really focusing on this global approach. And now all these high performers that I have that are really go-getters, you know, we're looking at promotions and now they may not be getting them. And how do I actually keep those people motivated? You know, how if I don't have that career path to provide them, you know, or if I don't have that extra dollars to give them, how can I keep them motivated? So we talked about that in terms of culture types. You know, do you have projects, different projects that you can give a fixer and independent? And, you know, do you have ways that you can motivate stabilizers and organizers? Maybe projects that need some organization or order put to them. Are there things like that that they can work on? So it can definitely impact productivity. And obviously, I could drone on about it for hours.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, the great news is that there are tools. The first step to success in anything in life is awareness and understanding. So part of what we're talking about today on the show is just gaining an awareness that whether you're somebody who's an employee or whether you're somebody who's a manager, by knowing that, it's just going to give you that opportunity to be able to shift your perception ever so slightly so that the next time something like that happens, you don't go right into the blame or justify or complain or frustration or gossip, but you actually have tools and access to, oh, I remember what Meg said on the show that one day. This person just might be a fixer, and now I have an opportunity to look at this differently and to find a solution rather than to be reactive and adversarial.
Yes, absolutely. And that is always our goal, is to make your teammates actually your teammates and not your enemies.
I love that. So when people and companies are preparing for change, what are some ways that they could effectively prepare and implement change?
Well, the first thing I would tell them is to buy our book, because the second section of the book actually talks all about change. And so, it talks about the process of change, and that the process of change stays the same. The way people interact with change is what's different or changes. So based on your culture type and your work preferences, how you process a change might be different. And so if you understand what we call, our model is called the Kurtz Change Transition Model, KCTM. And so if you understand how the process of change goes from the change happens to decline, and then you let go of the old, and then you go through an innovation phase, and then spin up what your new normal is going to look like, understanding that piece, and then understanding how all your different culture types are processing those different pieces of the change transition model, and most importantly, when they're processing them and how you can help them process them, makes a world of difference in how change actually happens in your organization. And then you're actually taking an active role. So there's a chapter or a section in the book called Change is Hard, and then hard is crossed out, and then we put in thrilling, because we've all sort of hid behind this, geez, change is so hard and we just have to gut it out. That's not actually true. We're the most innovative in a time of change, but organizations don't always do a great job of sort of latching on to that opportunity to be innovative that people, you know, are working on. And so then they lose all those opportunities, all those brilliant ideas, and that's when people get really frustrated. Also, change fatigue is a big issue that we get to talk about a lot, and managing people's expectations of what's happening with the change, being transparent and really celebrating wins, even the small ones, especially if you're rolling out a big change, are some key tips I would say are important for change management.
Yeah, I remember somebody who worked for a big four company was telling me that transparency is critical, and that when a major project or change is being undertaken, giving an opportunity for a symbiotic kind of reciprocal relationship where the people who are encountering the change have an opportunity to share feedback. The feedback might not be implemented, but they have an opportunity to have a say in the process and to understand where the process is at and where it's going, so they feel included rather than excluded.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the change always has to do with them. When we're in a leadership role, we know all of the working parts. And so we think it's very easy for our brains to assume that they don't need to know everything, which is usually true. But you have to remember that whatever change you're imparting on these people is happening to them in their work. And we spend whatever it is, 75% of our lives at work. So it's important that people know as much as they possibly can know about changes that are happening for them.
I love that. Well, Meg, we could talk all day about change management, but unfortunately the show is only so long. So do tell me, were there any other points or any takeaways that you would love our guests and listeners to walk away from today's show with?
Yes. So we have the culture type assessment, where you can find out if you are a fixer, independent, stabilizer, or organizer for free on our website. Our website is rosegroupintl.com. And there's a box on there that says discover your culture type. So that'll take you to the quiz, and it's about 12 questions. It takes maybe 3 minutes, and it'll spin up which of the four culture types you are. And then if you want your bespoke culture type report, you can click on the box to go to that. I think it's like $20 or something. And then it will actually show you which percentage of each culture type you are, and how that all kind of maps out and gives a full description of each of the types and kind of what your sickness is, if you will. So that would be the magical piece that I would invite everyone who's listening to look at, because you can use it yourself, and then you can culture type your whole group, your family, if you want, your grandma, anybody.
I love that. I know what I'm going to be doing right after the show. I think this is fascinating, and I think it's brilliant, because the more we understand ourselves and the more we understand others, the more we can create workability both personally and professionally. So I love all of these great tips that you've given us today, and I know what I'm going to be doing after the show, so thank you for that. Now, as far as where people can find the book, in addition to the amazing website and being able to culture type themselves, where would people find the book, and tell me a little bit more about the book?
Yes. The book title, again, is IX Leadership, Create High Five Cultures and Guide Transformation. And you can find it on Amazon. If you just go on Amazon and search IX Leadership, you'll find it. Let's see. It is also, there's a link to it on our website. And then we also have another website called ixleadership.com, where you can find a link to the book and some of the other ways we engage with our clients and the public.
Oh, I love it, Meg. Well, you've definitely given me a lot of food for thought, and I'm intending everybody out there got one or two things, if not more, of value today. So thank you so much for joining us today. Everybody, definitely check out the website, check out the book, find out what culture type you are. The book, again, is IX Leadership. And again, if you missed any portion of today's show, you can always find the show on iTunes later in the week. Under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes, we invite you to subscribe, leave us any feedback, feel free to rate the show. We appreciate any feedback you might want to leave us. You can also find us on our Get Yourself the Job page on Facebook and leave us any comments or feedback or questions for our guests there. And you can find the show as well on the latalkradio.com website on the Get Yourself the Job page. At the bottom of the page is the archives of the show, where you can find this or any prior shows and listen at your leisure. So thank you so much to Meg for joining us today. And thank you to everybody who tuned in. Whether you're listening now or in the future, we appreciate your listenership and wishing everybody a wonderful rest of your week.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.